Who's the fool now? Now, this is not a Father's Day message, but I was thinking about my father this week. My dad is a wonderful man. He's very kind, he's loyal, and he has a good sense of humor, even if it is sometimes unintentional. However, at the risk of embarrassing him, I share that there is one thing about him that most people don't know. My dad is very particular about his recycling. Every week, he spends an enormous amount of time arranging his blue box to prepare for its pickup. The paper and cans, etc., are neatly arranged. They're not just thrown in. My mother remarked one day that his obsession with the blue box was thoroughly unnecessary. The collectors could not care one whit about how his blue box looked. However, Mum spoke too soon. Not long after Mum's comment, Dad happened to be at the curb when the recycling truck came around, and the collector asked my dad, "Is that your blue box?" And Dad said, "It was, of course," he said that. The collector then stated that my dad had the best blue box in the entire city. Well, there was no critiquing his recycling efforts now. I'm afraid I do not take after my father on this one. I do separate the paper from the other stuff, but it's hardly considered neat. I am, however, a huge fan of all the blue box activity that we undertake. Recycling, I've decided, is, besides being environmentally sound, is frugality at its best. It makes sense to reduce, reuse, and recycle as much as we can. As a group of people, farmers may be the best recyclers around, having tried to reuse things for hundreds of years before it became fashionable or necessary for the rest of us. Case in point is the following experience that I personally had. Some of you may remember that for 9 years of my life, I was a farmer. Along with Laura, we ran a Christmas tree farm out at Selkirk, Ontario, which was just down the road from the provincial park. We had greenhouses for annual flowers, and I also spent time cultivating and selling nursery stock. As part of what we did, I have vivid memories of cleaning out our manure pit. A fun job, to be sure. I trimmed trees, I mowed the rows between the trees, and my least favorite thing of all was spraying pesticide. Actually, for the last couple of years that we lived there, I gave up spraying because it was so harmful both to the wildlife and to myself. And in Ontario, to buy and use agricultural pesticides and herbicides, you have to be licensed. And as part of that licensing process, you had to take a course and then you had to write an exam. The process has to be repeated every 5 years, and I undertook it twice. The problem with pesticides, besides the obvious chemical danger in handling and application, is what do you do with the empty containers that once held those pesticides? At some farms, the number of empty containers can be quite significant, and you cannot just throw them out with your regular garbage. Most retailers who sell the pesticides are now required by law to take them back, but what do they do with them? No matter how much you rinse them out, they still have a residual pesticide locked in the plastic. During my second run through the course and test, we were given demonstration of one innovative solution to the problem of these waste containers. Into the classroom, our instructor brought a 9-inch long cylinder that was mostly gray in color, but had several flecks of color throughout. The instructor went on to explain that the cylinder was a small sample of a much longer fence post. Perhaps you've seen in rural areas or even in many parks, farm fence posts, those round ones. Usually they are wooden, but in this case, our instructor showed us one that was made of compressed, recycled plastic from pesticide jugs. I had to admit that I was impressed. It was simply ingenious to use a waste product to make something so useful. And in this case, something that would last considerably longer than a traditional wooden post. I am really intrigued with people who can take something that we normally throw away and make it into something useful and even desirable. Actually, I think we all admire this. Otherwise, we wouldn't take to recycling so well. I've always wished I could come up with an idea to take what is garbage or some kind of waste and somehow turn it into a valuable commodity. You see similar things like that all through nature. What actually is honey? That delightful nectar of nature. Well, it's nothing other than bee spit. I love mushrooms in all kinds of forms and in all kinds of dishes, and I still love them despite knowing what the material is that mushrooms grow in. When grapes are pressed into juice for wine making, the fermentation process is actually yeast, one-celled animals, eating the sugar and then giving off waste. And then there's the dove, that beloved Christian image. A dove, however, is just a poetic name for a trash bird called a pigeon that causes no end of headaches for apartment dwellers in this town and around the world. And yet God used it as a symbol for the Holy Spirit. Jesus himself grew up in a place that was actually thought of as a trashy place called Nazareth. Nathanael said of Jesus, "Can anything good come from there?" And let's not forget where Jesus was born. Not in a sterile hospital or even in a nice room in a house. He was born in a stable. And what goes on in the stable of a barn? I know because I used to try and manage the results of what went on in the barn. What were Jesus' first smells when he entered life? Animal waste. And then there's Jesus' death. He was crucified at a place called Golgotha, which was actually at the dump in Jerusalem. Jesus died smelling garbage. Now, I know you're probably uncomfortable with these images, and that's a good thing. Because the first thing we need to know about how God works in this world is that he takes life and he turns it upside down. What we think is important or valuable, God rejects, and he takes what we reject and makes it invaluable. Time and time again, the scriptures tell us that what we think is weak and most despised and most contemptible in your life and mine can become, through the power of the Holy Spirit, what is most beautiful, what is most radiant, and what can produce the most blessing. God can turn trash into treasure, just like empty pesticide containers can be turned into useful fence posts. God just loves to take things in this world and turn them upside down. If you don't believe me, turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and begin to read at verse 18. Here is some of what Paul talks about. I know very well how foolish the message of the cross sounds to those who are on the road to destruction. But we who are being saved recognize this message as the very power of God. As the scriptures say, I will destroy human wisdom and discard their most brilliant ideas. If you want to be first, Jesus says, you got to be willing to be last. If you want to be strong, you have to be willing to be weak. If you want to win, well, you got to be willing to lose. That is what this Holy Week, this whole week is all about. It is Jesus demonstrating what God's values are, and quite often those values are clearly at odds with the rest of the world. And nowhere is this truth more powerfully demonstrated than when Jesus enters Jerusalem. As we know, for approximately 3 years, Jesus has traveled around the countryside teaching, meeting people, and most impressively, performing incredible miracles. In many very overt ways, Jesus has demonstrated to anyone who cared to see that he was the Messiah. The miracles, the symbols, the predictions all pointed to the fact that the one Israel was looking for was Jesus. Now, opinions on Jesus were mixed, partly because of his background, believe it or not. He was reminded often that he was from Nazareth, that he was just the son of a carpenter. But a significant number of people began to believe that he was the chosen one. The blind who regained sight, the lame could walk again, the lepers were cleansed, and most recently, Lazarus had been raised from the dead. All these things screamed that indeed Jesus was the Messiah. Now, as the Passover, the highest and most important or significant holiday in the Jewish year, drew closer, expectations just got crazy. They went to an all-time high. Now would be the very best time and opportunity for Jesus the Messiah to make his intentions known to the world. But what exactly were those intentions? Now, common belief and expectation among the people of Israel in Jesus' day said that the Messiah would come and bless Israel by driving out their oppressors. In other words, people in Jesus' day commonly held that the Messiah was to be a military leader. There was a whole group of young men in Jesus' day who developed into a kind of a rebel army. They were called zealots. And they took to trying to physically overthrow Rome's rule. And it's interesting to note that Barabbas, the one the Jews chose over Jesus, was likely a zealot who was arrested for attacking and perhaps even killing a Roman soldier. In fact, some of the disciples were believed to be zealots, as we see when Peter immediately grabbed a sword to cut off the high priest's ear in the garden. Many other ears were inclined to Jesus, just waiting for him to announce, "Take up your swords, drive the awful Romans out of this land." I should also tell you that many scholars have come to believe that this desire to see a military move by Jesus may actually have been the motivation behind Judas's betrayal. Some have speculated that Judas betrayed Jesus to force his hand. Surely Judas thought, when the soldiers come for him, he will call his people to arms. Yet, as I said, God's ways are not our ways. And often they seem to be at odds with each other. As the crowds long for a military ruler, Jesus chooses to enter the holy city riding on what? A white charger like some conquering general? No. He rides on a small donkey, a colt actually. Why? Well, historically, when a king came to a neighboring kingdom or even one of his own cities, if he wanted to demonstrate peace, he came not riding on a horse, but riding on a donkey. Donkeys in Jesus' day were symbols of peace. Imagine what would have happened if Jesus had come in on a white horse of some kind. How far do you think the Romans would have let him travel into the city? Yet Jesus is the Messiah. He is the King of Kings, and he comes to bring peace, not war. The Israelites believed their salvation and their hope came from the point of a sword, not from military strength. What Jesus demonstrated was so unexpected that when he was arrested and lashed and humiliated, the crowds that cheered his coming abandoned him and called for his death. They see Jesus so as far removed from the mark of what they thought the Messiah should be that they reject him. Let's go back to the Apostle Paul again in 1 Corinthians, and there he writes, "God's ways seem foolish to the Jews because they want a sign from heaven to prove it is true, and it is foolish to the Greeks because they believe what agrees with their own wisdom. So we preach that Christ was crucified. The Jews are offended, and the Gentiles say it's all nonsense." Just look at how confused Pilate was in John chapter 18 when he's investigating Jesus. Are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus replied, is this your own question, or did others tell you about me? Am I a Jew? Pilate said. Your own people and the leading priests have brought you here. Why? What have you done? And Jesus answered, I am not an earthly king. If I were, my followers would have fought when I was arrested by the Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world. Pilate replied, you are a king then. And Jesus said, you say that I am a king, and you are right. I was born for that purpose, and I came into the world to bring truth to the world. All those who love the truth recognize that what I say is true. And what did Pilate say in response? What is truth? And we continue to echo Pilate's question 2,000 years later. We see how the world works, you and I, with its hunger for power and influence. And we see how Jesus rides in on a donkey, and we wonder just how sensible his approach is. Couldn't God have just forced us into believing in him? Couldn't he have just used some sort of cosmic bullhorn to shout the truth into our hearts? Instead, we read of a procession on a donkey and of a crucifixion, and we think, how offensive, how nonsensical. It makes so little sense. It is not how the world works, and certainly not what attracts the world to want to follow anyone. No wonder the Pharisees objected to the crowd's praise of Jesus on Palm Sunday, because they too wanted in their hearts to say, this isn't what we want. This isn't who we want. Stop shouting and stop praising him. In fact, they went so far as to ask Jesus himself to stop the celebration. It was as if they were saying to Jesus, even you must realize how ridiculous this parade is. You must be aware you cannot be the Messiah because you're not what we expect or want. But the Pharisees were not the arbiters of truth. Even if the disciples had remained silent that day, Jesus says the very stones under their feet would have cried out. For the next 7 days, this holy week, we will relive how God turned our world upside down. How God took what was seemingly a monumental failure, namely Jesus' crucifixion, and turned it into the greatest victory of all. How God took the humiliation of Christ and turned it into the greatest blessing. Most of all, we will see how God took the curse of hanging on a tree and transformed it into the miraculous act of forgiveness and salvation. Remember, dear brothers and sisters, Paul writes, that few of you are wise in the world's eyes or powerful or wealthy when God called you. Instead, God deliberately chose things the world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they are wise. And he chose those who are powerless to shame those who are powerful. God chose things despised of this world, things counted on as nothing at all, and used them to bring to nothing what the world considers important, so that no one can ever boast in the presence of God. God has turned our world upside down. He has shaken everything that we know in order to redeem what we thought was lost and to give value to what we would consider worthless, namely our very selves. Hopefully on this Palm Sunday, I've helped you recycle your ideas about who Jesus is and what he stands for, as you journey to Good Friday and Easter morning.